Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. It looks like Barack Obama has won North Carolina by a substantial double-digit margin, and Hillary Clinton is ahead by single digits in Indiana, with, if I'm to believe the pundits on the various cable news channels, still metro areas to report in Indiana, where the vote is more concentrated and theoretically more inclined to vote for Barack Obama. So we'll see as soon as we get something. If you get something, send me an email. If we, as soon as we know about Indiana, we'll let you know. Isn't it exciting? Don't you just sit there on the edge of your chair? As you know, the Supreme Court recently ruled on a case with zero merit. The Republicans in Indiana introduced legislation requiring people to have photo IDs of a very stringent nature. We have it here in Georgia. It was turned down by an appeals court in Georgia and piggybacked into the Supreme Court case that was decided. Indiana's photo ID, voter ID law, the Supremes decided was constitutional. No problem with requiring people to produce a photo ID in order to vote. Now, a lot of people call it an invisible poll tax because it does cost money to do this, to get these ID cards. Some way, shape, or form, it does cost money. It also puts people at a disadvantage who normally just don't have photo ID for whatever reason. The Supreme Court, and I think we all agree on this, all Democrats, all normal people, Republicans don't agree on this, but voting should be made as easy as possible for citizens of the United States who meet the basic qualifications of a certain age and a citizen of this country. Other than that, there shouldn't be any impediments to voting in a real representative form of government. Now, I'm not so naive as to believe that we still have that representative form of government. We do not. We all understand that. That is washed away probably back in the 70s. We have something that appears to be representative form of government, so-called democracy or democratic republic or however you want to say it. We all agree, I think, at this point that it is illusory. It's an illusion. With the fraud, with the voting the machines and the touch screen and how the system has been corrupted with money and so on and so forth, that we and media, the filthy media, we really don't have representational democracy any longer. But we still tell ourselves that we do. We still maintain that we do. And then along comes something like the Supreme Court decision on voter ID cards. And based on a case brought by the state of Indiana, I believe, a bill introduced by Indiana Republicans that said photo ID was necessary in order to prevent voter fraud of the sort where somebody shows up and says, I'm Joe Smith, and votes, and it's not really Joe Smith, it's Irving Brown. Now, the fact is that I don't see how the Supreme Court heard this, because there has never, ever, 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 ever been a case in Indiana that met that criterion. Somebody named Joe Smith or Abe Snake or whatever showing up to vote, and it wasn't really him or her. It's never happened. So Indiana created, the Republicans in Indiana created this imaginary situation. Voters showing up who weren't really who they claimed to be in voting, and therefore skewing the election and doing it in such mass numbers that it was skewed election. This is Republican idea has always been to reduce the number of people voting. It is easier to manipulate a smaller segment of the population. That's always been the goal and the aim of Republicans since forever, since going back to the framers of this country. It's always been, I don't think so. No women, no blacks. They're not even full human beings anyway. They're only 3/5 of a human being. None of that. Nobody that doesn't own land. You got to be a white male landowner. How will that work? So it's always been that way, to try to reduce the number of people participating in participatory democracy. And apparently the American public has gone along with it because we are who we are. We are kind of racist. We are, what are we? We don't like the other. We don't like people coming to this country. Being of Irish and Italian descent, I can tell you there was a time when Irish and Italians were looked at just slightly above dogs, and that's debatable. So the other has always been suspect. And the other, in the case of Indiana, is Democrats. So, the state of Indiana passed a voter identification law. The Supreme Court upheld it and said, no, it's okay, go ahead. You can go ahead and do this, and next time maybe you can say only left-handed people can vote or can't vote or what have you. You have to prove that you are right-handed, whatever. Well, guess what? 12 Indiana nuns... Nuns, 12 Indiana nuns, that's right, no, this is not from The Onion, 12 Indiana nuns were turned away today from a polling place by a fellow nun because the 12 did not have state or federal identification bearing a photograph. Really, is this story true? It is true. Sister Julie something, said she was forced to turn away her fellow sisters at St. Mary's Convent in South Bend across the street at the University of Notre Dame because they had been told earlier that they would need such an ID to vote. The nuns, all in their 80s or 90s, didn't get one, but came to the precinct anyway. Sister Julie's, Julia, or whatever, one came down this morning, and she was 98, and she said, I don't want to go do that. Some of these nuns showed up with outdated passports. None of them drives, obviously. They weren't given provisional ballots because it would be impossible to get them to a motor vehicle branch and back in the 10-day time frame allotted by the law, Sister Julia said. She said, quote, you have to remember that some of these ladies don't walk well. They're in wheelchairs or on walkers or electric carts. Nonetheless, she said the convent will make a, quote, very considered effort, end quote, to get proper identification for the nuns in time for the general election. She said, quote, we're going to take from now until November to get them out and get this done. You can't do this like school kids on a bus. I wish we could. Now, a voter hotline set up by the Secretary of State's office had no complaints regarding photo IDs as of 3 p.m., said a spokeswoman for the Secretary of State in Indiana. The spokeswoman said the number one call that we've heard so far is people asking where they go to vote. Oh, God. Anyway. Again, Indiana's photo ID law is the strictest in the country. The Republican-led effort to get that law passed was designed to combat ballot fraud, according to the supporters. And the supporters also acknowledge that no case involving someone impersonating a voter at the polls has ever been reported and prosecuted in Indiana. So there you have it. Nuns? No, that's got to be. That can't. You know, I got this story from about 7 different sources today, but that can't be true. It just can't. The first part can't be true. 12 Indiana nuns turned away from a polling place because they didn't have federal ID. Old ladies, 80s and 90s, some of them showing up with expired passports, probably with a visa stamp from the Vatican or something. But that's not, no, mm-mm. Sorry, sisters, little sisters of the poor. No. You are brides of Christ. You have nothing to do with voting, so take yourselves out. Do you believe that? You think that story's true? You never know. But like I said, I got that from 6 or 7 sources, so let's just assume. If it's not true, it's a hell of a poignant story, isn't it? Brides of Christ being denied voting rights because they can't prove they are brides of Christ. There's something very amusing in that, isn't there? We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
They want to recount all the votes since the bats gave machines some strife and woe. They say, just say no. They keep on lying all the time. W and Cheney did. Couldn't win without a slimy trip. To Washington they had to run. States' rights just weren't that much fun. Don't you hate that crap? They just keep lying all the time. just keep lying all the time.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
It is 21 past the hour. Arrests for war protests are, or any sort of protest is, those arrests are, they don't make the news anymore. You know, why should they? In the first place, when it happens, it's usually only one or two people. And, there's just something so passé now about protesting war, right? It's just, so what? I know if I go protest, they'll just keep, the Democrats will keep funding it, and the Republicans will keep instigating it, so what's the point? As a matter of fact, the whole nation, the undercurrent, the feeling behind the Democratic primary season here is, to me anyway, is this kind of muffled gearing up for yet a fourth war. On George W. Bush's watch, we have, of course, Iraq and Afghanistan and Somalia, the one that nobody's reporting about. And next will be Iran, then Syria, and then Lebanon. And this all has to come to pass between now and the end of the year. And, it, you know, good chance it will. But so when somebody's out there protesting war, what you hear across the fruited plain, border to border and coast to coast, for the most part, is a collective yawn. Oh, there are some of us who don't yawn, but for the most part. An anti-war march and protest in downtown Kent, Ohio, following Sunday's commemoration of the 38th anniversary of the May 4th, 1970 shootings at Kent State that resulted in four dead, has resulted in four arrests. How about that? Synchronicity, or is that what you call it? No, not synchronicity. What do you call it? Four protesters who sat down in the middle of Kent's West Main Street Bridge and refused to comply with the order of Kent police officers to clear the road were arrested and charged with failure to comply with the order or signal of a police officer, a first-degree misdemeanor, according to the Kent Police Department press release. The four arrested included Yvette Coyle, a Kent State University conflict management major, Aaron Brooks. What does Aaron do? Coyle is also an organizer at the Cleveland chapter of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Aaron Brooks, Sable Foster, Bill Athrell, and Yvette Coyle. Is that right? Are those the four? I think so. The march was organized by the Kent State Anti-War Committee and the Portage Peace Coalition. It began on campus and proceeded west along East Main Street, stopping at the Kent State University U.S. Air Force ROTC building to post paper peace signs on the doors. The march continued on city sidewalks until it reached the corner of West Main and Franklin. At that point, police clad in riot helmets and armed with pepper ball guns attempted to reopen the bridge to vehicle traffic shortly after 4:30 p.m., approximately an hour into the downtown gathering. While early on, officers stood by and allowed the protesters to chant, dance, play music, and hang signs from the bridge. An officer now in a police cruiser used a public address system to order the protesters to vacate the road. Everybody kind of moved off, but four protesters did not, and they were arrested. The $1,000 bond was that was needed was raised within 2 hours, and the protesters are out. No court date. I don't think a court date has been set yet. And in the press release about this, oh, no, court is set for Thursday, day after tomorrow, 8:15 a.m. with the press release, a couple of quotations here, which are interesting, from the psalmist, Psalm 120, verse 6. Too long I have lived among those who hate peace. From Sartre, freedom is what you do with what's been done to you. James Baldwin, it is very nearly impossible to become an educated person in a country so distrustful of the independent mind. And Martin Luther King Jr., quote, never, never be afraid to do what's right, especially if the well-being of a person or animal is at stake. Society's punishments are small compared to the wounds we inflict on our soul when we look the other way. So, four arrested in Ohio. No, that doesn't quite make it as a song, does it? Four Kent State connected individuals arrested for protesting in commemoration of the students who died there 38 years ago. 38 years ago. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. Apparently on Countdown the other night, maybe it was last week, Oberman was talking about what he refers to as forehead-to-keyboard moments, courtesy of the Bush administration. As you probably know, Bush is looking for another war supplemental. A war supplemental. He wants another $70 billion for his wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Of course, I'm sure the Democrats would give it to him. $45 billion of that is to cover combat operations, despite the fact that major combat operations were declared complete 5 years ago. But words are birds, right? Speaking of major combat operations, non-American press, not here, but around the world is reporting that U.S. attacks on a Sadr City hospital last week resulted in 20 Iraqi patients and workers wounded, 49 civilian and ambulance vehicles destroyed. So there you go, bombing a hospital for peace, justice, and the American way. That's really going to win some serious hearts and minds in Iraq. But, you know, in the fog of war, blah, 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 blah. An update on the Orwellian No Child Left Behind program, which has resulted in graduation ratios going down and schools hurting for funding. Turns out that one of the cornerstones of the program called Reading First, you know who's behind that, Neil Bush, is a program emphasizing literacy, and it's administered, owned, whatever, by Neil Bush with money from the Saudis, has proven to be totally ineffective. The reality is that No Child Left Behind is actually leaving children behind in favor of lining more pockets of this filthy, corrupt Bush crime family. And especially the blood members of this gang, Neil Bush, who you know, has been involved in more scams than Jesse James. Now, one thing the Bush crime family has done, we've been talking about every single thing that they have attempted has wound up in abject failure. And everything that was working has been broken. Everything, all the institutions of government that had promise of providing either security or protection for the American people, and by protection I mean regulatory agencies, whose job it is to make sure that we don't put fecal material in our mouths when we have lunch, or that our children are not playing with toys that will make the little tykes glow in the dark. Every single thing that Bush and his thugs have touched, and that's every area of government, has been corrupted, broken, destroyed, rendered ineffective. One law, bill, whatever the hell it is, that the Bush crime family is really pushing for with the support of the National Rifle Association and conservative insane people is this proposal to allow concealed weapons inside national parks. Oh, God. You know, schools, churches, shopping malls, doesn't make any difference. National parks. Now, apparently, this is a long-sought goal of the gun lobby in this country. The plan put forward by the Interior Department, which supervises about 400 national parks and 500 wildlife refuges, would repeal a rule banning guns in the park system that's been in place for decades. Interior Secretary Dirk Kempthorne said in a statement announcing the rules change that, quote, the safety and protection of park and refuge visitors remains a top priority, end quote. You see how they involve in Orwellian newspeak, black is white, up is down, left is right, and Dirk Kempthorne says that, well, we're going to repeal this decades-old law because we are interested in the safety of the visitors. The chance of becoming a crime victim of any sort in an official U.S. refuge or park is one in more than 708,000. One in 708,000. But conservatives have joined the Republicans have joined the National Rifle Association to press for weapons in the park before a new president, the Democrat, takes office next year. Do you know, for the first year or two of the 8 years, the Democrats will probably get a lock now if they do this properly. For possibly the Democrats, possibly the next 20 years, maybe 24 years on the Oval Office. Do you realize how many years it's going to take just to repair the damage done by the Bush crime family, like this, for example, to make sure that some of the gutting of regulatory laws and just and fair tax laws, all these things that the Bush crime family has utterly shredded and destroyed, it's going to take a couple, 3 years probably just to repair the damage to get back to zero. You know, this filthy administration has reduced us to less than zero where it concerns just the things that you would expect in a society like ours. Rule of law, right there, just the rule of law, just starting from that point. They've destroyed it. It's going to take a long time. The Park Service advocacy groups representing park rangers and people who visit these areas a lot have condemned this rule as a politically motivated sop to the right wing. The right wing ought to be rounded up and taken into one of these huge parks and released at the same time they release about 500 famished grizzly bears. And the right wingers should be given a sporting chance here. Here's a box of matches and a wet sponge. Now,
what are we supposed to do with it?
I don't know. It's just something. Now go. The bears are coming. And put Limbaugh and Hannity right in the front of that pack. Follow me! Chairman of the Coalition of National Park Retirees said, quote, this proposed regulation increases the risk to visitors, employees, and wildlife rather than reducing it, end quote. Of course, that's why Dirk Kempthorne says that the change in the rules will ensure the safety and protection of park and park visitors, refuge visitors, if everybody's allowed to carry a gun when they go to a national park. They really do have to be eliminated. Conservatives, Republicans, the Bush crime family, it has to be eliminated, sent to some quiet place where there are lots of hungry bears. Now, for tonight's health moment, you didn't know we had a health moment? Well, we do. According to the Reuters News Agency, this is coming from a World Health Organization meeting in Geneva, the risk of a human influenza pandemic. Now this, there's a point in my telling you this, so just hold on. The risk of a human influenza pandemic remains real and is growing. We don't hear about this anymore, see, as the bird flu virus becomes entrenched in poultry in more countries. That's according to health officials. That was their warning today. 150 experts are attending this meeting hosted by the WHO to update its guidance to countries on how, what to do if a deadly global epidemic comes. And I think people who study this are fairly certain that it is coming. The H5N1 avian flu virus has infected bird flocks in much of Asia, Africa, and now parts of Europe. Experts fear it could mutate into a form that passes easily from person to person, you know, like, achoo! Oops, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Sparking an influenza pandemic that could kill millions, if not tens of millions of people. A disease control expert at Thailand's health ministry, a doctor, I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his name, said, quote, the risk of a pandemic remains and is probably expanding, end quote. This virus is persisting on three continents, has caused human cases in Indonesia, Egypt, and China this year. Yada, 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 yada. It goes on to say a pandemic could obviously shut down businesses and schools and overwhelm healthcare systems, particularly in poor countries. That sort of thing is certainly expected. A pandemic has the name pandemic because of its virulent nature. The World Health Organization has set up two global stockpiles of the antiviral Tamiflu containing 5 million treatment courses for use in a pandemic. 5 million? And how many people? Okay. So that's the setup. When we come back, I'll tell you what the plan is in this country. All right? Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. There is great concern among attendees at this World Health Organization conference in Geneva. 150 experts there are concerned about what to do when the next global pandemic strikes, which it most surely will, and it appears it's going to be some version of an avian flu. So what to do? They're all working on things to do to deal with it. Here in the United States, there's a report here. This can be found in the May edition of Chest. CHEST, CHEST, which is the medical journal of the American College of Chest Physicians. No, I didn't know such a thing existed either, but there it is, CHEST. The report is put together by a medical task force comprised of physicians from prestigious universities, medical groups, the military, and government agencies. And it outlines that specific groups of people should not be treated, and by deduction should be left to die, should a flu epidemic infect millions throughout the U.S. Well, sure, this is one way to reduce the voter rolls. Doctors in various government agencies, including the Department of Homeland Security, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and the Department of Health and Human Services, have concluded that the already ill, the weak, and the severely injured, and the elderly will have to, quote, forego, end quote, life. Now, Jesus, this is a culture of life in the United States. We will commit mayhem to prevent, to protect zygotes and blastocysts and little massive cells. But according to the report, which appears in the May edition of CHEST, those who won't be treated include, got your pens ready? People older than 85, those with severe trauma, which could include critical injuries from car crashes and shootings, severely burned patients older than 60, those with severe mental impairment, which could include advanced Alzheimer's, those with a severe chronic disease, such as advanced heart failure, lung disease, or poorly controlled diabetes. Now, these are people who, when they show up for treatment because of the flu pandemic, will be told, oh, sorry. According to the article, designated hospital triage teams will ultimately decide who gets treated and who is left to perish. That occurs now, but it's usually based on an overwhelming flood of trauma injuries who come into a hospital as a result of some natural disaster or explosion, industrial disaster. And, you know, when you're faced with 60 people on the floors of your emergency rooms, who do you treat first? Well, triage comes into play there. But this is not that sort of triage. The lead writer of the task force report told the Associated Press, quote, the proposed guidelines are designed to be a blueprint for hospitals so that everybody will be thinking in the same way when pandemic, flu, or other widespread health care disaster hits. He goes on to say, Dr. Devereaux, Asha Devereaux, prior to the rationing of critical care resources, hospitals and surrounding areas must first experience a trigger event that includes a declared state of emergency and lack of critical equipment or infrastructure. So in order to exclude those five categories of people, there has to be a declared state of emergency, and the hospital or the medical facility has to have a declared lack of equipment, critical equipment or infrastructure. Chief author of the report goes on to say, if a mass casualty critical care event were to occur tomorrow, many people with clinical conditions that are survivable under usual healthcare system conditions may have to forego life-sustaining interventions owing to deficiencies in supply or staffing. In other words, as people come in, if you get 100 people come in with this horrendous flu, this theoretical flu that's going to occur, and of those 100 people, say 40 of them fit into these five categories, and there are only enough medication to treat, say, 60 people, then obviously guidelines have to be set out. I say obviously because it's obvious. Guidelines have to be in place to determine in these triage teams, these special triage teams, who will be denied care, whatever that care is. It may just be some sort of respiratory relief or some sort of, I don't know, the Tamiflu, as my understanding, is totally ineffective to this sort of garbage. It's just kind of a placebo that's sitting there waiting. Here, come get your Tamiflu. Oh, I feel better already, thud, and the person falls down dead. But the five categories of those who will be denied health care is kind of creepy. You know, the idea of rationing health care is certainly unpleasant, according to a senior vice president of the American Hospital Association. But, he says, this report could help the public understand that it will be necessary. Oh, my God. Well, I guess that makes sense. That is the way it goes. Some critics have noted that the report may set a grim precedent for other disasters, such as a repeat of the Hurricane Katrina-type situation. What is that called, Kathy, that type of attitude? Survival for the greatest number, and the lesser number can go to hell. Utilitarianism, that's right, thank you. So utilitarianism as applied to caring for the sick in a pandemic in this country. Other countries are figuring out ways to respond in a more positive way, but of course not us. Our main goal over here is to make sure that only people who deserve to live, live. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. The number here is 800-989-1480. We're going to take some phone calls here momentarily. It looks like Hillary Clinton's campaign is over, and I don't think her advisors are going to suggest that she drops out. They're going to continue to claw and shred the Democratic Party. But given the double-digit win in North Carolina by Senator Obama and what is getting a narrower and narrower win, if it turns out that way in the end, which it probably will, for Senator Clinton in Indiana, I think there's only 5 or 6 percentage points now that separate the two of them. It is clear. It can't be any clearer, can it, that it is time for Hillary Clinton to graciously concede, thank her staff, applaud the efforts of the Obama campaign and the wisdom of the American people in wanting what appears to them to be change and a new start away from the sickness that has infected this country since 1980. But the chances of her doing that are about the same as your chance of striking a match on a wet cake of soap. So, but I think the results tonight are a clear indication that, yeah, it's been close. Clinton has certainly used the kitchen sink philosophy in this campaign. They've thrown everything at Barack Obama they could, everything from suspicions about his religion to suspicions about his patriotism to playing the race card, to his inexperience, to just on and on. Hillary Clinton has done everything to align herself with the right wing in this country, even going so far as to, play pat ass with Bill O'Reilly on the faux news channel. Everything that she can possibly do, and still the American people are saying, well, sorry, Hillary, looks like we're going to go with the other guy. So it is time, I think, isn't it, for Clinton to bow out. I would like to say graciously bow out, but I don't think at this point in their political lives, either the Clintons are capable of a gracious bow out. I just don't think so. One last thing here before we go to your phone calls. The senior leader of the ruling party in India, the BJP party, came down heavily today on on George Bush for his half-assed statement on the food habits of Indians and how they were contributing to the global food crisis. What Bush had said the other day at a Worldwide Technology Incorporated, or he was there visiting Worldwide Technology Incorporated in Missouri, he said, quote, there are 350 million people in India who are classified as middle class. Their middle class is larger than our entire population. And when you start getting wealth, you start demanding better nutrition and better food. And so demand is high, and that causes the price to go up. End quote. Now, that is so typically Bush. It is an absolute asinine statement. Oh, the part about demand causing, in a capitalistic system, demand spikes price. Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. So he's blaming 350 million people in India for this this interesting phenomenon that's occurring in the past several weeks globally of manufactured shortages. Well, they're going to become real now with this devastating cyclone that hit Myanmar. When it was Burma and the British controlled it, it had developed a reputation of being the rice bowl of the world. It's all gone now. So, in George's addled mind, there's only one rule, supply and demand. That's it, supply and demand. It doesn't make any difference if either is artificially manipulated. It's still supply and demand, supply and demand, supply and demand. So what he's saying is that the 350 million people in India who've decided maybe it's time to eat those damn cows that are wandering around the streets, no, they can't do that. Those are sacred cows. Isn't religion wonderful? Isn't it? But because they have developed a more sophisticated palate now, instead of eating dirt and roaches and mice, they are starting to want things like corn and wheat and maybe an apple once in a while. And because of all that, since they're no longer eating gutter food, all of a sudden the price of food around the planet is going up. Well, the Indian political leadership has taken offense to that. They really have. The leader of the ruling party in India says the statement is irresponsible and went on to say that Bush had no business to comment on Indian food habits when it was an established fact that Americans consume far more junk food than any other community in the globe. The leader of the BJP party, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his name either, said that if anybody needed to change their food habits, it was the Americans. Bush is just tightening the noose around the necks of this society as tight as he can, isn't he? Huh? They don't hate us because we own houses, George. They hate us because you scum sucker, you continue to denigrate people. You continue to ensure that the planet, we're way beyond the point, the tipping point now, but that the planet continues to heat up, thereby destroying populations that happen to live, like in delta sections of the world because of global warming. And on and on and on. Nuclear proliferation? Doesn't matter. Let's have more bombs. Unless it's Iran. and now, casting aspersions, I guess is the way to put it, on the eating habits of 350 million people in India. Well, we wouldn't have these price spikes if they wouldn't eat. I mean, goddamn, they haven't eaten in five generations. Why are they starting to eat now? A hungry Indian is an alert Indian. Jesus. Next thing you know, they're going to be coming over here and wanting our jobs.
Yeah, they already got that.
All right, let's do some phone calls. The The elections tonight, the primaries in North Carolina and Indiana may get some of your attention. Maybe not. Oh, one last thing. John Bolton is saying now, he's our ex-ambassador to the UN and a war lover that makes Cheney look almost as like a pacifist. John Bolton is calling for U.S. airstrikes on areas of Iran where, honest to God, cross my heart and hope to die, really, truly, we're not kidding this time, there are training camps where insurgents are trained to go back into Iraq and oh, I don't know, kill each other. So John Bolton is saying that striking Iran, now get this, striking Iran, U.S. airstrikes, would represent a major step toward victory in Iraq. How did these dumb sons of bitches ever get to the point where anybody listens to them? How does that happen? John Bolton, one of the sickest of these warmongering pigs, is now saying, yeah, well, the way to win in Iraq is to start another war in Iran. There you go. That's the ticket. All right, let's go to your phone calls. Ken is calling from Dallas, listening on the internet. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Malloy?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm just so glad, man. I'm doing great. I was telling your screen, I'm just so glad to have the ability to listen to your show. I didn't know you were back on in my area here, and man, I tell you, you my hero, man, because you're one of the few guys that has the cojones to call it like it is, to say what needs to be said, and. Well, I'm just overjoyed right here. At,
all right, now, Ken, take a deep breath. Come on.
Okay, man.
Come on, take it.
I'm trying, man.
I'm a radio host, man. Come on, take a deep breath.
Hey, but you are the man. You know, few guys have the kahunas to come out and say what needs to be said, and you don't have the kahunas to say that, so. You're my guy, man. And
well, I appreciate that. But, you know, somebody said, and I'm going to screw this up, but somebody said something about in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is considered, the numero uno leader. So,
I hear that.
Anyway. But what you really what you really called about, that's it?
That's really it. I was just having to get you here. And
well, Ken, that's very kind of you, man. I thank you. Thank you very much. All right?
Oh, I mean it. I really mean it. I was just so glad to catch you guys when you went off of an
hey, hold on a second, Ken. Let me come back to you because I got a break here. We'll be right back.
For Radical Talk Radio, make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
21 past the hour. I'm talking with Ken in Dallas. All right, go ahead, Ken.
All right, yeah, I was saying that I'm so glad to have you back because, you know, keep in mind, I live in Dallas, Texas, here, and I got to Limbaugh and Hannity
years,
and, you know, I can't take that crap. So it's just so great to have a man back on that I can, you know, actually listen to, man. I'm gonna have to catch up with all the stuff I missed in the last year. I didn't know you were back actually on radio here.
Well, I appreciate that. That is very kind of you to say that. And
yes, sir. You do what you do, man. You do it well. And
well, get the word out. Let people know that we're available now in Dallas. All right.
Oh, hey, Ken? Guess what? I'm a computer specialist. I'm gonna definitely pass the word on here in Dallas, Texas, and a lot of people that were like me wanted to listen to you and Air America and Randy. And once you left, they decided it's just kind of like me, cut the station loose. So
I hear you.
I'm going to definitely put the word out there. And you keep up what you're doing, man.
All right. Thank you, Ken.
All right, guys.
All right. Take care. Take care. Okay. Here, Ed sent this to me. The muskets are stacked and ready. The dogs bark in the background, hurried to move on. In the land of the blind, a one-eyed man is king. The dogs bark, the sun rises, and the caravan moves on. Must have something to do with British imperialism, right? couple of emails here regarding the plan to set up special triage teams and to eliminate certain people for emergency treatment if there is a major pandemic that strikes the U.S. and the attitude that certain people will be asked to forego life. Jesus, where do these terms come from? DB writes, forego life. Great phrase. Just wait till the Pentagon or too much cappuccino perino gets hold of that one. Sort of fits in with collateral damage. Forego life. Sir, we're going to ask you here to forego life. Oh, okay. All right. Thanks. See ya. Regarding guns and bird flu, Eleanor writes, the scene, Yellowstone Park, bird flu and guns. Can you see it now? All the grandmas and grandpas visiting with their families will be immediately infected and fall over dead. Younger family members will be shooting each other with their newfound delights, their sidearms. Moseying in to feast on the scene are all the elk and antelope already infected with prions and looking for some unsuspecting repository for the bovine encephalitis they carry. And here, center stage, is old George W. Bush insanely waving his scythe, having wended his way to the northwest and long run out of bush to clear. Anyone who thinks that Tamiflu is anything like it's supposed to be, that it's cracked up to be, ought to just Google it and then consider themselves lucky for missing out. It's just getting crazier and crazier, isn't it? Brooke in Indiana writes, Mike, just wanted you to know that I did vote my heart today and voted for Obama. I was almost swayed by the media blitz and the preying on fear, but in the end, I did what my gut was telling me to do. I just got off the phone with my brother who did the same. He was so split down the middle as I was, but he said as he was standing in the voting booth, not knowing what to do, the words, yes, we can, continued to run through his head, and at that moment he pushed the button to vote for Obama. Change is possible in this country. Obama may not be able to radically change our government, but I believe he is the best chance for a start. I'm listening to his speech in North Carolina, and even in this hour he is still gracious to Hillary Clinton. I know I've made the right decision. It feels great. Brooke in Indiana. And from Prairie 2 regarding triage by ID card. Hey, Mike, do you suppose you will get treatment if you flash your InfraGuard ID card? Prairie 2 writes, there has been an effective control system developed to contain highly contagious pandemics. Everybody stay home. In 1918... many of the worst flu outbreaks were traced directly to tent preachers who would lure people to packed theaters and keep them there all day with the promise that God would protect them. By the end of the service, there would often be a dozen dead in the seats, and the outbreak would mushroom from there. Yeah, I think in a time of real national tragedy, the last thing that makes any sense at all is to start chanting nonsense to a sky being. Back to your phone calls. Stephen is calling from Burbank, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Stephen.
Yeah, hi, Mike. Again, we have a disagreement. These poor bears in the forest, we turn these insane neocons loose.
Yeah.
First bite, a bear would keel over from the toxicity.
That's true.
I mean, they're just so awful.
That's true.
And as far as this, you know, triage noise,
yeah.
I wouldn't get the treatment because I'm a bona fide nutcase.
Yeah, you are.
And also, my wife mentioned, like, take a 95-year-old Alzheimer's person
yeah.
who just happens to be a rich Republican.
Right.
And so, Mike, I think I'll let you go now because we might get Marge, okay?
I hear you. Thanks a lot, Stephen. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. Do y'all want to talk tonight or not? I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 open lines. The number is 800-989-1480. I know you're used to being tricked when I say, well, we'll take some calls in just a minute, and then an hour goes by. 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malone.
go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-six before the hour. In Indiana, out of over a million votes cast in the Democratic primary, it is now down to about a 40,000 vote difference with Hillary Clinton in the lead. 40,000 votes out of over a million cast. And still, as far as I can see, none of the networks is calling the primary, the voting for either candidate. All right, back to your phone calls here on the Malloy program. From Alameda, California, Virginia is calling, listening on the internet. Hey, Virginia.
Hi, sweetie. I think we've got you back on the radio out here again, too. So,
well, yeah.
In San Francisco, that green station, y'all are up there again, aren't you?
No, they switched their... no, we are. Yeah, we're there. That's right. I'm thinking someplace
cool.
else. Yes.
Yeah, I'm just in the snow. I'm out here walking the dogs. What a glorious day, in spite of all this madness. And that was real nice. I think what we did in North Carolina is really going to change this up, finally. And we got to, Mike, we talk about it so much, but I will guarantee you that all these really wonderful, articulate people that call you very rarely call up another voter to get them to change their vote where it matters. And I don't know where anything changes when we don't do the most basic things like that. I mean, I've never done it before, but I know I made a difference. I called up. They were telling people in one place in Indiana that if they were Republican, they couldn't vote. This lady told me, yeah, my neighbor said she was never going to vote for Hillary ever, and then they told her she couldn't vote, and it was an open primary. So, you know, I called her up, and the lady calls up her neighbor, and, you know, the lady goes back over there and votes. Had another guy who was a new citizen. He thought his old registration wasn't good anymore, and he had to do it over again, and that he missed the date, so he couldn't vote. Yes, you can. You can vote. Total Barack fan. And it make all these things make a difference. But is anyone going to cover the story on the 1.2 million, you know, registrations that Indiana threw in the trash, or just, you know,
they
just purged off there? I'm tired of these purges. It sounds like
I haven't heard about that one yet. I'm sure somebody will email that to me.
Black Box Voting has it. 1.2 million people's of those, all those new ballots got thrown out. All those new registrations get purged off the rolls.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So check out Black Box Voting, and I hope they can run an investigation on that, because I think we would have won if it hadn't been for that. It's just, I talked to hundreds of people, hundreds, literally. You know, I've been doing this since Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to physically, with my busted-up hip and my cane, go to either Oregon or Puerto Rico, wherever anybody pays for me to go.
I hear you, Virginia.
And that's the only way that I see things changing, because, you know, I don't even turn on the TV anymore. It's impossible. How could the first poll that they came out with tonight be about right? Are you kidding me? What do they think we are, Mike? I mean, it's just time to start, like, you know, emptying whatever firearms you have into the television and just pick up the phone and, you know, get busy and talk to people, because it makes all the difference in the world. I've turned so many people who are independent or Republican, and, you know, they just, you know, you just talk to them common sense.
Well, that's true. That's true. Sometimes just sitting down with a neighbor and talking stuff out will make all the difference in the world. Thanks, Virginia. Appreciate you checking in. By the way, for you folks who listen to KPHX or stream Nova M programming, you know, internet streaming, right after my program goes off the air at midnight Eastern time tonight, Jeff Farias will come back on, our colleague at KPHX, for at least a couple of hours to continue with live coverage and to take your calls about these two primaries. Let's switch over to the MSNBC feed now, Kathy, if you can. Hillary Clinton is about to speak. Let's see if we can get some of this. Maybe we can't. There we go.
Tonight, we've come from behind. We've broken the tie, and thanks to you, it's full speed on to the White House.
What? Oh, my God.
Extraordinary experience traveling across Indiana, having an opportunity to meet so many of you. And for everyone who holds your breath at the gas pump, afraid to see how much it costs today. And for everyone working day and night because you want the world for your kids. For every young person with big dreams who deserves a world of opportunity. And for all those who aren't in the headlines but have always written America's story, tonight is your victory right here.
Can somebody tell me what she's talking about? Did I miss something? She lost by double digits in North Carolina and is barely holding on in Indiana.
I want to commend Senator Obama and his supporters on their win in North Carolina.
Oh.
You know, we are, in many ways, on the same journey. It's a journey begun long before we were born. It is a journey by men and women who have been on a mission to perfect our union, who marched and protested, who risked everything they had to build an America that embraces us all.
Okay, come on,
and
come
on. Tonight, once again, I need your help to continue our journey.
Send money. Our journey? No, look, don't even try to out Obama, Ms. Clinton. You can't do it. Yes, we will. I just discovered something. Bill Clinton can't clap in unison. That's weird to see.
It meant the difference between winning and losing. And we can only keep winning if we're able to keep competing against an opponent who does outspend us massively.
All right, that's it. Thank you. Thank you. Goodbye, Senator. Thank you very much. So send in those dimes and dollars, ladies and gentlemen. Send it to our P.O. Box because we have to continue to compete. I am going to, Hillary Clinton, am going to do everything in my power to shred this young punk from Chicago who has effectively stopped me, excuse me, from being the next president and the first female president of the United States of America. So send money, send as much as you can, and we'll try to teach Bill behind me here to learn how to clap in unison. Back to your phone calls. Perry is calling from Fort Lauderdale, listening on WINZ. Hey, Perry.
Hi, Mike. Boy, you know what? I used to be a big fan of the Clintons, but I'm not now. When I hear her voice, I want to throw up. I am so disgusted. Can she not realize that she is in a no-win situation?
Well, I know. What is this on to the full speed to the White House? What the hell is she talking about?
There is no way that she can actually win the nomination without it making look like Obama got screwed. And there is no way black voters are going to come out there and vote for her. She is not going to get the vote. She will not beat McCain if she gets in.
I'm not so sure about that. I really do think that people are sick to their guts of Republicans. And that's a good reason.
No, I believe.
Well, that's a good reason not to vote for Hillary.
Right, but I don't believe that if she wins the nomination, I don't believe the black voters will come out there. And besides, the Republicans are so scared to death of Barack Obama for a couple of reasons. For one, if he gets the nomination, all the news cameras are going to be in the black sections of town. So they're not going to be able to get away with two voting machines for 3,000 people and one machine doesn't work.
Yeah, that's true.
They're not going to be able to screw around like that.
Not this time.
This is really disgusting. And just so quickly, because it's the first time I've ever called you, and I wanted to tell you this because really, I don't get a chance to listen very often because the station I listen on normally goes down to about 10 watts after 6 o'clock p.m.
Yeah.
So I don't get much of a chance to listen. But I noticed that in the beginning when I was able to listen, you played a lot of like Pink Floyd From the Wall.
Yes.
And did you ever notice a couple of things in The Wall kind of pertain to this administration? Like, do you think that, I always think that those voices that George Bush says he hears, uh-huh, are those voices right before Comfortably Numb?
Yeah, well, that's very true.
And if you listen to Waiting for the Worms,
yeah,
that's a pretty good description of this administration.
It is indeed. And Comfortably Numb is it's kind of been my anthem for a number of years until I finally woke up. Well,
the
listen,
more things change, the more they stay
the more
the
they
same.
Stay the same. Perry, thanks for checking in, pal.
All right, take care.
All right, don't be a stranger. Call us again. Quick break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's 10 before the hour. One of the reasons Jeff Farias is going to come back on for Nova M web streamers and KPHX listeners after this program, which is about an hour and 10 minutes, Jeff Farias will come back on. The results from Northwestern Indiana, which arguably is part of the suburbs of Chicago. Those results, Lake County, according to election officials in Indiana, those results will not be available until after midnight Eastern time, which would be for KPHX listeners after 9 p.m. tonight, and we'll be off the air by then. So Jeff Farias will be sitting in. I don't mean sitting in. He will be hosting a kind of a impromptu program immediately after ours, which will, how do they say it in radio? Interrupting our regularly scheduled program, ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Farias. He's going to show up back at KPHX to keep you updated. So for KPHX listeners in the Phoenix area and people who stream Nova M, stick around, stay tuned, because Jeff will be the one to tell you who... I would assume they'll have the results by then, who actually won in Indiana, because Lake County is, I think the population of that county, somebody emailed me, is what, 500,000? Is it that big? No, it couldn't be. Is it that big? I don't know how many of those are people who actually went to the polls, but it is close to Chicago, and obviously that would have an effect on Obama supporters, because he's, you know, senator from Illinois. So stick around. Stay with KPHX or Nova M Streaming when this program's over, and Jeff will come on and give you the results. From Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic, Brandon. Hey, Brandon, welcome to the program.
Hello, long-time listener, long-time voter, first-time caller.
Well,
how are you doing tonight?
I'm okay.
Basically, I was, Hillary, even if she somehow managed to win this, which, you know, I'm a math minor and I can even figure it out that she's not going to be able to really get this nomination, especially after tonight. But even if she managed to, I don't see how anybody could actually vote for her. I mean, there's this old saying, you know, the ends justify the means. How do you vote for somebody when they've used the means they've used to get the nomination that she has?
Well, in fairness, though, isn't it true that our political system has become so unbelievably corrupted by negative advertising. It is true that, I believe this, that Barack Obama has not even approached the level of ugliness that Hillary Clinton has in her negative advertising. But wait until whoever gets the Democratic nomination gets the Democratic nomination. The Republicans are going to use every single thing they can, whether it's gender, race, especially if it's race, to shred our system of electing a president. But again, I am not a Hillary Rodham Clinton supporter based on her policies. I couldn't care if she was male, female, black, white, gay, straight. I don't care. It's her policies that prevent, and so many Clinton supporters just don't quite get that you know, you take a look at a candidate, what a candidate has done in his or her history as a representative of the people, and you make your decision hopefully based on that. Based on that, I don't think Hillary is qualified. She is John McCain light. I mean, she has tried to align herself more with the Republicans and John McCain in the latter stage of this campaign than anyone who is a self-respecting Democrat would. And that's the reason I don't support her.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, I've had friends of mine actually say that, well, I really don't like Hillary Clinton's policies, but I voted for her in the primary because she's a woman. And it makes me want to scream.
Well, I think that's a mistake when people say that I voted for this one because we voted for, not we, but a lot of people voted for George Bush because he was the kind of guy you'd like to have a beer with. Well, in the first place, he wouldn't do beer. If you want to go have a line of Coke, he might do it with you. And look how that turned out. We've had 7 years of unmitigated hell, the destruction of this country. So I don't believe people should vote for someone because they'd be fun to have a beer with, or because they're a woman, or because they're African American, or because they're Irish, or whatever it is. If you can't take the time, if one can't take the time to take a look at the history of these candidates, the electoral history, the voting history, and what they're saying they will do, and who they've surrounded themselves with as advisors. If you can't do that, then you're going to get someone because they're a woman.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, when I first started looking at all the Democratic candidates, and you know, I took a look at Hillary Clinton, I said I couldn't support her because she's just too corporate. She's, you know, she might as well, you know, represent all the corporations instead of all the people. And you know, so far, she really hasn't done anything that changes that opinion.
I hear you loud and clear. I hear you loud and clear.
Well, have a good night. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Brandon. You too. We're going to have to wait to take another call because we're getting close to the break here. But when we come back, we'll pick it right up where we left off with your phone calls. So stick around. I don't think there's going to be a result here. Hillary Clinton, oh my God, she's hugging Bill. I wish somebody would teach Bill how to clap. You know, when somebody said he was our first black president, I thought, yeah, black president, this guy can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
Oh, look, she's wearing a blue pantsuit.
A blue pantsuit, yeah.
It's a blue blazer today.
Yeah, it is. It's a blue blazer. All right.
But there's no scarf. Where's the scarf?
The lead... Clinton's lead in Indiana keeps getting smaller and smaller. Still 4 percentage points separating the two of them. But again, with the votes not counted yet, or at least not presented to the Secretary of State of Indiana for whatever they do with them, votes not counted yet in Lake County, that should make a difference. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy, and this is the primary night in North Carolina and Indiana. Barack Obama wins by double digits in North Carolina. The race in Indiana still has not been decided, although Hillary Clinton has decided to decide it. She, I guess, is going to be another decider or something. I don't know. She's claiming victory. And according to some election officials officials in Indiana, the results from that state will not be available till after midnight Eastern time. So in light of that, Nova M Radio will stream a special edition of election coverage with Jeff Farias, who is one of our colleagues at KPHX. Also, KPHX listeners, if you stay tuned to the station when this program is over, Jeff will be there to bring those final results. One county in Indiana that is not reporting any results yet is Lake County, which arguably is a suburb or an exurb of Chicago. Consequently, there would be, one assumes, that is Barack Obama territory, there would be an inclination to vote for him. If Hillary Clinton does pull this out, it's going to be by one or two percentage points, which I don't think is a resounding victory on the road to the White House after being thoroughly trounced in North Carolina, but that's just me. So anyway, stick around. When this program's over, special edition of election coverage tonight with Jeff Farias, our colleague at KPHX. All right? Back to your phone calls. Lloyd is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Lloyd.
Hey, Mike. Great to talk to you. All I can say is I'm glad hockey season's over.
Yeah. We don't get preempted anymore, do we?
No, and I hope they don't preempt you for Sparks basketball. Anyway, regarding tonight, I think that one key thing is her that remark that she made about annihilating Iran. I mean, anybody that had to have cost her the liberal Democratic base right there. And you can't win without that, can you?
I don't think so.
You know, and then the other thing is the Reverend Wright thing. You see, in a way, it's a good thing because they won't the Republican sleaze machine. They won't be able to use that in the general election. What else they got left? You know, I mean, Karl Rove. I don't know if he's going to be working in the background, but what else can they throw at him?
At Barack Obama?
Yeah, because I mean, you know, Reverend
well,
Wright,
it's
they used it up now.
When Barack Obama gets the nomination. What will happen is the attack from the Republicans is going to be a no-holds-barred racial assault against him. They will use every single thing they can for public consumption, short of the N-word, and in private conversations, out of the glare of media, they will use the N-word. They will do anything and everything they can to defeat Barack Obama. And if they, in addition to attacking him racially, they will do anything. They will accuse him of being gay. They will accuse him of being a drug user. They will accuse him of being a closeted Muslim. They will accuse him of being a former cellmate of Ahmadinejad. The Republican slime machine is the most vicious, anti-American, anti-democratic sludge ever put together. So when you say, what can they throw at him? Everything. And it will be gut-level stuff below the belt, and the primary thing they will go after him about will be race. Republicans hate people of color. They despise them, and especially American blacks, so-called. And that's what it's going to get down to. Trust me on this, Lloyd.
Okay, well, the last thing is, I think that he'll be able to overcome it, but a couple of key things. He'll have to get the Latino vote, and he'll have to get the independent vote by emphasizing McCain's Republican tendencies.
Right.
So, and that's all. That's all. And I hope that Marge calls in from Indiana to give us a local perspective.
Yeah, I wish you'd call in so we could wish her happy birthday. She had a birthday
I didn't even know that.
A couple of days ago, yeah. All right, thanks, Lloyd. I appreciate
you
checking in. All right, pal. Take it easy. Yeah, the attacks against Obama will bring bile up into the back of your throat, unlike anything you've ever experienced. This country, let's keep in mind where we are and who we are, okay? Let's try to keep that in mind while, you know, we're all pretending like the racial thing doesn't exist anymore. The reason we don't see it as clearly right now is because these are all Democrats, and the racial thing does not break down quite as brittlely among Democrats. It still breaks down around racial lines. You bet your ass it does. This is America. Come on, folks. Don't drift off into some la-la land where you think all of a sudden older white people above the age of, say, 35, are all of a sudden going to say, oh, well, he's colored? I didn't know that. You know, no. That's not how it works. As far as Republicans of any age, they despise people who are not exactly like them, because people who are not exactly like them, that is white, for the most part, self-referential, self-centered, people who are not like them are a threat, because Republicans believe in the herd instinct to the point where if somebody, please, would just lead them over a cliff, they would all follow. So when Barack Obama does become the Democratic Party's nominee for president, it does not make any difference. It will not make any difference who he picks as his running mate. He could pick John McCain as his running mate. It won't make any difference. The Republican attack machine, the slimy sons of bitches who exist in this country down in the gutter, behind the woodwork, the real scum, the wealthy scum, will go after Barack Obama based primarily on the fact that he's not completely a Caucasian. So you might as well prepare yourself for it. It's going to be vile. And as I don't make predictions concerning politics, you better write this one down, because this one is easy to make. I've been an American all my life, and the fact that I'm only predominantly white gives me kind of an insight into this. Huh? Well, I say predominantly white because I'm Italian. Back to your phone calls. Mark is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Mark.
Hi. I wanted to give a little psychological insight into why Hillary is shredding Barack right now. One is tactical, and one is taken from Carl Bernstein's book, Women in Charge, by the way, which the Clintons have been drastically distancing themselves from any type of serious biographies or historical accounts of what her life has been like. And she, at the root of her personality, was shaped early on to be a really hard-driving overachiever. Her father wouldn't give her any type of applause, you know, for good grades or anything. It was like pulling teeth from him, and it just shaped her very, very early on to be a really vicious fighter. And as far as her tactics, during the 60s, she had her little stint with liberalism, and she made her marks at Wellesley, you know, with activism. But when she got into real politics with her husband, she started to learn right away that she couldn't really play the game straight. They lost a real early on election, and from that point forward, everything became very mechanical and statistical. She hired an expert that stayed with her through many, many years through the Clinton campaign. And it wasn't about passion. It wasn't about her personal values. It was about what this guy would do and pull people with and turn it into a very almost like deep blue type mechanical chess game with no real human side to it.
Yeah,
that's what you're seeing here,
right?
Playing out.
I think you're absolutely right, Mark. Hillary Clinton trying to be spontaneous or trying to be you know, when she has given speeches in front of these political gatherings, these rallying speeches, her attempts to be her attempts to relate to the people in the audience, her attempts to be, quote, one of the boys, her attempts to be part of the common folk are almost embarrassing to watch, because she is none of that. You're absolutely right. Thanks, Mark. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Mullen.
don't have to pay a lot. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that.
21 past the hour. Okay, so the bronchitis is almost gone. Now I'm losing my voice. That's great. That's really wonderful. Boy, I'm glad I work in a profession where I don't need my voice. Oh, wait a minute. Lee is calling from San Diego, listening on the internet. Hey, Lee, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I don't know how long my battery's going to last, but it's good to talk to you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Hey, yeah, regarding racism here, it's like the Maytag repairman commercial.
Yeah.
White America wouldn't stand for it if that was a black guy just lollygagging around. We wouldn't get a giggle out of that commercial.
No, we wouldn't.
But I've always thought that Lindsey Graham's going to be McCain's running mate because they've done so many photo ops and trips together.
That's now, true. Yeah, that's
yeah.
true.
Now, regarding the Indiana margin, the 4%.
Yeah.
Remember, the Supreme Court made that ruling, what, 4 or 5 days ago, saying that you can't show up without having a photo ID.
Right.
So that was ruled just before, 4 days ago, just before this election.
Well, yeah, and the first story that I got tonight regarding that was a dozen or so nuns in Indiana who showed up to vote, elderly women, and they were denied because they didn't have the right kind of voter ID. Now, I don't know if the story is apocryphal
That's true.
Or not.
They were denied by a fellow sister, if there is such a term.
Yeah.
who knew them? She was in the same nunnery as the rest of them. But because they didn't have the ID, they couldn't vote even though she knew them. That's how strict this law is. And it has obviously cut down on the number of voters. Could that have given Hillary Clinton... I don't like to call her Hillary. Senator Clinton, you know, the margin, who knows? But, and what do you think?
Well, we talked about this earlier this evening, and that is that the Republicans have always been hell-bent, determined to reduce the number of people who qualify as voters in this country.
Right.
They'll do it any way they can. On gender, they got away with that for a long time. On race, they got away with that for a long time. If they had their way, it would be only white males would be allowed to vote. But since they can't confront this head-on, first of all, because they're cowards. Second, because they're hypocrites. Third, because they're members of a herd. They do things like create a case in Indiana, and they say, well, we need the voter fraud law because, you know, we're afraid people will commit voter fraud. And not one single case of voter fraud along the lines of somebody showing up and saying, well, I'm here to vote, and being someone other than who they were. Not once has that ever happened.
That's right.
Now, normally, the Supreme Court will when they're asked to hear a case, they'll look for the injured party so that they can rule, you know, who, just like in Gore versus, Bush versus Gore, whoever, Bush claimed to be the injured party. If the vote counting continued in the state of Florida, based on the rules set up by the Florida Supreme Court, then Bush would be the injured party. In the Indiana voting case, there was no injured party.
Right.
None. And I find it ironic that since the Supreme Court is heavily Catholic, that the first people to suffer, at least where the media picked up on it, are 10 Catholic nuns. Ha ha, isn't that a knee slapper?
And people don't realize that this picture ID can only be gotten with a birth certificate and a Social Security card. And the certificate, the birth certificate, is not an easy thing for a lot of people to get. That requires money, that requires research in some cases, and in some cases it just isn't available for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it is not an easy thing to get.
Yeah, that's very true. We've had a voter ID law here in Georgia for a couple of years. It was put in suspension until the Supreme Court ruled because there were a couple of appeals that said, no, you can't do this here in Georgia. There are several, 30 or 40 states now that have these half-assed voter ID laws that all of them have been instituted by Republican legislatures. All of them are an attempt to reduce the number of people, just like purging the voter rolls is another way. Like Greg Palast has written about a million words about what happened in Florida in 2000 prior to the voting when Choice Point, this filthy organization that existed here in Atlanta, went down to Florida and purged, quote, the polls, voter registration polls of people who had no business being purged. So, and that's a Republican idea. The whole idea of the Republican Party, they know they can't win anything in a fair contest. Nobody wants anything to do with Republican Party policies, especially not now. So how do they win? Cheat. That's the only way they can, or reduce the number of people who are eligible to vote. I've said it before tonight. I just wish, since they are lemmings, Lee, I wish somebody would just lead them over the nearest cliff. Thanks, Lee. Got to move on. Appreciate you checking in. Thanks a lot. Scummy bastards. Really, if somebody can think of a use for a Republican other than as a footstool. Or someone to bring your soup when you have a sore throat. I don't know what they're good for. I really don't. But truly, if anyone has any doubts about how the Republicans are going in the presidential, when it actually gets down to McCain and Obama, anyone who thinks that the Republican attack machine, maybe not right up front, the McCain team, but the people who will be in the shadows, the scum, the filth, in other words, wealthy Republicans, the real pro-corporate America Republicans, the dumbasses, the killers, the soul murderers, what are they going to do? They will not be able to handle Barack Obama's youth or his idealism. Or the chance that he might do a damn good job, say that they will go after him based on race.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy. When all our rights have been taken away,
would you have guessed that a little college 25 before the hour could ever bring all these bunches little bees? What it feels like we're living in a place. Back to your phone calls. Robin is calling from California, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Robin.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going fine. How are you?
Not bad. Speaking of the Flying Monkey Right Blues, your blues man on the road at your service.
Hey, how you doing?
What did Hillary say there? That first thing that she said? Mike, it's happened. It's finally happened. All these years we've been calling her Republican right or light. Now she's gone Republican heavy.
Yeah.
Who else looks at something like this and says, I'm winning? I mean, you know, we've been listening to her for the last 7 years about Iraq.
Yeah. Well, I think what Hillary has fallen victim to is what a lot of politicians fall victim to, and it's not hubris, it's blind ambition. She is so driven and then has behind her this crazy man. Well, he wasn't always crazy. He might have been. Well, he was what he was, but he wasn't always crazy. That was Bill Clinton. And Bill, listen, I'm going to have to put you on hold, Robin, because the noise coming through your phone is just overwhelming us here. So we'll talk again maybe when we got a better connection. Thanks a lot for checking in. But I understand what you're saying. Watching Bill Clinton all through this campaign season has not been pleasant for someone like me who supported him early on. I was disappointed during the campaign back in 91, especially when he left the campaign trail to go home and oversee the execution of a retarded man in the state of Arkansas. But that was certainly the first red flag for me. It should have been one of many, and it was. I tended to ignore him during the 90s, except when he misused NATO to order military strikes for the first time since World War II in Central Europe that resulted in the deaths of hundreds, if not thousands, of Serbians who, as far as I know, were innocent of anything other than being in the way. I understand what was going on in that country. And it maybe it did require troops, but maybe I just don't know. I just know that the whole thing, the whole enterprise that Bill Clinton got involved in, to me was violating certainly the NATO charter. I believe the way it was set up. But there was instance after instance then, all the NAFTA stuff, all of the things, the so-called welfare reform acts that literally forced women with children, single women with children, into low-paying jobs where it was impossible to find child care. The kids wound up in so many instances staying with relatives, aunts or grandparents or on the street. The so-called theory of triangulation that Bill Clinton came up with, taking the Republican goals and making them Democratic, you know, the whole thing started to stink. It really did. In spite of all that, when the right-wing attack machine went after this poor, miserable dumbass because of what he did with Monica Lewinsky, I felt compelled to come to his defense back in 98, 99, when we were on the air in Chicago. And it wasn't so much a defense of Bill Clinton as it was a counterattack, I realize now, against this filthy, disgusting Republican attack machine. But to see Bill Clinton now standing behind Hillary, like, for example, tonight, unable to keep up the beat in kind of a rhythmic clapping, which was kind of sad, listening to him on the campaign trail as he deliberately in South Carolina invokes the one thing that the Republicans are going to use against Obama, and that is the race card, over and over and over again. And Bill Clinton is so used to skating near the edge and getting away with it. And he had a lot of support from a lot of people. A lot of Republicans supported him because he was the darling of the banking industry. It was Bill Clinton's efforts that removed so many of the restrictions on the banking industry in the 90s, which set up the mortgage crisis business here. Once George Bush's cabal came into power, all Bush's people had to do was build on what Clinton had started. And you know the rest of the story. And in the meantime, of course, the Clintons got fabulously wealthy. If $100 million income is considered fabulously wealthy anymore, I guess it's not. I guess it's just considered what the ruling class in this country considers to be a normal year's income. But to see Bill Clinton and to have listened to him over this past year has been a real exercise in restraint for me to not just completely say, you know, Clinton, you just totally fooled me. I realized the degree perhaps to which we all were fooled by Bill Clinton, but totally fooled, you know, I always felt kind of on top of Clinton's game, although that's a joke on my part, like I'm smarter than Bill Clinton, no way in hell. But I always felt that way. And maybe that's because Bill Clinton had the way of making one feel that deep underneath it all, he was just a dumb hillbilly from Arkansas, which obviously he was not. I mean, absolutely not. But he was able to put that out into a certain segment of the population, I guess, people like me, other white males, who are not from the South, not of the South, like Clinton was. And he managed to put that out while, you know, hey, I'm a Rhodes Scholar, but don't let that fool you. I'm just dumb as dog dumping on the street, man. You know, hey, and Hillary and I, Monica, we just, you know, all that kind of crap and garbage. And frankly, like a lot of people, I realize this might be some kind of a backdoor cop-out, but I'm so sick of the Clintons and the Bushes. I really am. I'm just sick of them. I'm sick of the melodrama. I'm sick of the mismanagement of the country, of the economy, of our foreign policy. I'm sick of it. I'm just sick up to my eyeballs of this whole group of these rat bastards going all the way back to 1980 and Reagan Bush 1. I'm just sick of them. Sick of them. Since 1980, for Christ's sake, we've had to deal with either Bushes or Clintons, and I'm just sick, just completely up to my eyes with both of these predatory right-wing families. The fact that one claims to be a Democrat and the other one claims to be a Republican is nonsense. They are corporate entities. They operate in a certain way that benefits the ruling class in this country. For Christ's sake, if you don't believe it, just take a look at the last 28 years and you tell me who has been the winners. Who? Take a look at it. I'm sick of these people. And if Barack Obama gets the presidency and turns out to be another one of them, okay, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, don't get fooled again. The who, whatever. You know, I know who McCain is. And, you know, regardless, I get a lot of emails from people that say, you know, Barack Obama's no different. Okay, you may be right. You may be right. But as far as the Bushes and Clintons are concerned, I'm so over both of these two families. One, just chock-a-block with the worst kind of pissy soap opera melodrama. The other one, just chock-a-block with criminal activity, intergenerational, that just goes on and never stops, never stops. The Bushes are outlaws. If you trace them back far enough, I don't know what their family heritage is. What are they? Are they English? Are they German? I have no idea what Bush is. I don't care. But if you trace back far enough, you will find bandits, highwaymen, probably a few executioners, just people who have done nothing positive for their fellow human being. Nothing. And it's probably too late in human history for anyone, certainly in this country, to do anything positive. You know, we're teetering on the brink of just absolute environmental collapse. So I don't know anymore. This is, you know, this is like bread and circuses. It's like the last stages of the Roman Empire. I'm not insinuating that we're the Roman Empire. The entire planet, you know, sustained development, my ass. What we need is sustained retreat from development. There's no such thing anymore as sustainable, I should say, development. We have pushed this planet to the point where we're beyond the point of being able to pull it back. There's some major adjustments coming. Just major adjustments. This is a whole new topic, and I realize I'm getting all digressive here. But going back to the Clintons and the Bushes, I'm just sick of them. I don't care if tomorrow morning Hillary comes out and says, look, and everybody looks, and she actually walks on water. You know, it's just like, go away, please, and take your husband with you, and take the Bushes with you. Just get out of my consciousness. Before the hour, thanks to the crew for the program tonight. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Oh, and Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, who just recently became our military affairs correspondent. Thanks to everybody. And Sharon, the stories you sent me tonight, we just didn't get to because of election coverage. But we will. So it's come to this now. In Indiana, Hillary Clinton's 40,000... a person lead is now down to 19,000 as results are starting to come in from Northwest Indiana, which is one of the reasons that the Associated Press and none of the networks have called it for Clinton, even though Clinton claimed victory. The split now, percentage-wise, is 51-49, 51 Clinton, 49 Obama, and there's still votes to be counted. If Obama pulls this out at the last minute, there are going to be a lot of people in the Clinton camp who are going to wonder why it took so long to get those votes counted, what happened, yada, yada, yada. But it is extremely interesting to me to watch this play out. The fact that Hillary Clinton decided to declare victory, knowing certainly her strategists must have known that there, Northwest Indiana, not a single vote had been assigned, counted, I guess, assigned to either camp. So I don't know. Now, if you're on hold and I don't get to your call, if you want to stay right there, stay on hold. When Jeff takes over the program in about 14 minutes, Jeff Farias will come in to our studios at KPHX in Phoenix and continue the election coverage tonight until this thing is settled. So if you're on hold and have something to say, just stick around. When we bail out here at the top of the hour, Jeff will be on then about 6 minutes later. For Nova M streamers, you'll be able to hear the special edition of election coverage from Nova M, hosted by Jeff Farias. And for listeners in Phoenix, KPHX, stick around for Jeff Farias. Back to your calls here. David is calling from San Antonio, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hey, David.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
Hey,
how are you?
You know, I'm doing good. I wasn't going to call your show, but I wanted to hear Hillary Clinton's response because I heard your replay of Barack Obama's response. And, you know, Hillary Clinton, it normally sounds like she's yelling at the crowd and all that. So I just want to hear what she had to say. And she just started with a falsehood. She said how she came back and owned this, man. That woman has been in the lead in Indiana this thing has started. So how can she come out with a lie like that?
Politics, apparently, I don't know. I don't know, David, but apparently politics makes otherwise rational people go crazy. I haven't seen Barack Obama go crazy yet. I have seen almost every single one of the original gang of Republican candidates, from that Mitch Romney freak all the way to McCain. I've seen every one of them go insane and wind up under a psychiatric care someplace. On the Democratic side, I haven't seen anybody go crazy. I've seen them get out because they realized they didn't have the support of media, American media, to get their names and faces out there. And now we're down to Clinton and Obama. I haven't seen Obama go crazy. Even the crazy people around Obama are not crazy. I don't see any. you understand what I'm saying with that, I hope.
Yes, sir.
And the crazy people around Hillary are genuinely crazy. I mean, I don't get this. I think part of what it is what I've been saying. When everything else is settled and counted and everybody goes to bed and puts their head down on the pillow and says their prayers and it's all done, this country, it still gets back to race, my man. It still gets back to race.
Hey, let me say this before I go, Mike. You know what? I'm not against Hillary, but I hope she loses this Indiana primary, because she's not going to have egg on her face. She's going to have so much egg, it's
going to
be an omelet on her face.
It's going to be an omelet. All right, David, be careful. Watch out.
You too, Mike.
Take care. Thanks for checking in.
I'm still trying to get over how she and her handlers, her supporters, want all the votes counted in her favor from Michigan and Florida when her name was the only one on the ballot.
Oh, it's crazy.
And well, those voters really should be counted.
Not in Florida.
Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan. Hers was the only. But nobody campaigned in Florida. Maybe they ought to just split it. Give Michigan to Hillary or to. I don't know. I think if the Democratic Party made decisions and these candidates had a voice in those decisions. And the reason the Democratic Party did this was to get everything settled by March. Well, it came back and bit them on the ass. And if they're going to change the rules in the middle of the game, then, that's just not right.
So far, they've counted a few, apparently, of the precincts in Lake County, Indiana. And it looks like 75% of them are going for Obama thus far. And there's less than 20,000 votes now separating the two candidates. and there's 500,000 people in that county. I don't know how many are registered voters, but they said they had record turnout there, 80% voter turnout there, which is something like five times their average.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's incredible. If nothing else, this Democratic primary has inspired people to get registered and make one last effort at breathing some life into representative government in this country. I don't know if it's going to work or not. All right. For everybody that's on hold, stick around because there is a lot more of this manufactured excitement tonight. Regarding, I think the excitement now comes from the fact that it looks like there's a good chance that Barack Obama may pull out Indiana. If he does, if that happens tonight, and Jeff Farias will have all that for you coming up, stick around, continue to stream Nova M and KPHX listeners in Phoenix. Stick around. Jeff is going to take over here in about 10 minutes, and he'll stay with us. I think Jeff, knowing Jeff, he'll probably stay with it all night until there is a decision, a final decision on this. So if it turns out that Barack Obama wins both states, it's over. It's over. Put a fork in it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Do take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.